Golf Smarter number 179 for May 19, 2009.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
A Course Called Ireland with author Tom Coyne.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading another free episode of the Golf Smarter podcast. Stay tuned after our conversation to hear the 15 names of those who have won either a day or a week pass to the American Century Celebrity Golf Championship at Edgewood Tahoe, and the names of our two winners who will be staying and playing with me at Edgewood Tahoe this July. Just to conclude our soap opera, the airlines has conceded that my golf bag, including my clubs, clothes, toiletries, balls, shoes, everything is gone. They've sent me a check for about half of my claim, and I'm in the process of getting everything replaced. As much as I think about how frustrating the entire situation was, a smile still comes to my face when I remember that weekend also included my first hole-in-one. Our guest today is author Tom Coyne, whose earlier book, A Gentleman's Game, was a major motion picture release starring Academy Award nominee Gary Sinise. You remember Gary Sinise? He was Captain Dan in Forrest Gump. Well, Tom's latest book is called A Course Called Ireland, A Long Walk in Search of a Country, a Pint, and the Next Tee. Now, let me give you a brief idea of what this book's about and see if you can put yourself in his place. Tom decided to take 4 months to walk around the entire perimeter of Ireland and play golf at the 56 golf courses he came across. Wow. Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Tom.
Hello, Fred. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Well, thank you. It's going to be an entertaining half hour at the very least because your book is entertaining and it takes longer than a half hour. It's really a fun read. And I'm going to quote some stuff from it later, but let's just... The obvious question is, did you find what you were looking for?
Did I find what I was looking for? Well, I was looking for a lot of different things, I suppose. In the end, I was looking for a book, so I certainly did find that. And I think the story, you know, my trip around Ireland, spending 4 months there, traveling the country on foot, visiting the places where my family had come from maybe a century before. Yeah, there were a lot of things I was looking for, and one of them was sort of this, maybe an answer to this question of my attraction or connection to Ireland as a, you know, someone who's four generations removed and is a city kid from the United States. And, you know, what is it about Ireland, this sort of fascination that I had and so many people do have, and particularly as it related to golf? I've been taking these sort of golf trips with my father since I was in high school, going over and playing some of the links of Ireland. And really, you know, I just thought that was the greatest trip anyone could ever take. And just the greatest memories and greatest times I ever had were on these golf courses. And I suppose some of why I did this trip was trying to put my finger on why. And what is it about Ireland, golf in Ireland, the people, the fascination that I had and so many people have. And I think I did find some answers to that sort of question. I also found, you know, my love for the places, this sort of question of, are you Irish? Are you Irish American? You know, the way one celebrates their heritage, you know, sort of where does this sort of fit with who I am? And I think I definitely came to a sort of, understanding of that idea, which is, you know, and after spending 4 months on foot, taking Ireland at such a sort of slow pace and getting to know it, I think I found what I was looking for.
It's interesting you say how you took it at such a slow pace. I know on a much, much smaller scale that if I'm walking a golf course, I will have much stronger memories of it than if I get in a golf cart.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think that's really, I mean, everyone asks me, you know, why didn't you just get in a car? Why didn't you get on the bus, you know?
Oh, then I don't have to ask that question.
But it does, and it comes up in interviews or it just comes up, what was this about? And honestly, I mean, at the sort of inception of the idea, you know, it was a way to do Ireland sort of differently. I mean, it was a hook. It was sort of the sort of concept that was going to make my trip through Ireland a little bit different, because there have been some great books written about golf in Ireland. But what, you know, I needed a different way. I wanted to write about Ireland. I wanted to write about golf in Ireland, but I needed a new way to sort of crack that open. And, you know, playing Ireland is one big golf course, you know, because really the whole story kind of begins with me planning a trip for my friends to go over and do one of these, you know, we'll play seven courses in 6 days and, you know, plan that kind of trip that's a great trip. But if you print out a golf map of Ireland, I mean, it's a, you know, it's a country ringed by golf holes, by these great links courses. And it actually started to look like a golf course to me. And, you know, I thought, rather than play one piece here, one piece there, what if I just kept going on to the next one and going all the way around? You know, so that's sort of the original idea for doing the book. But when you play golf in Ireland, you walk. So I figured, you know, I can't, if I'm going to play it as one course, you know, they don't take carts over there. So I'm going to do it on foot as well. So that was sort of originally the idea for walking was a challenge. It was a chance to say, I'll play the world's, you know, craziest, greatest round of walking golf. But it really, as I was doing it, maybe the second or third weekend, after sort of my muscles and feet had broken in and I could actually do the walking, which was torturous, really, especially in the beginning, I came to understand that, you know, it's a good thing that I'm doing it this way, because I'm stopping in places that people don't stop. I have sort of a 15-mile leash every day, so I'm getting to know towns that tourists don't go to. I'm getting to know places that people don't really know about, and even the Irish themselves. So, you know, I was really sort of, as people say, why did you walk? And so many people would stop and offer me a ride all the way around. But it was always a matter of, you know, I'm doing it this way, and I'm not just doing it for the challenge or for the hook or to sort of write a book that people, you know, that has some sort of clever idea, this guy walked around Ireland. It's because by doing it this way, I knew I was going to have a good story to tell.
Yeah, absolutely.
I knew that I was going to go into places that and find stories that not everyone sort of had access to or had heard before. So it was really about finding the story.
I want to ask you the chicken and the egg question, but I want to quote a line from the book first, because I recently did a weekend golf trip with three buddies. We did four rounds in 3 days. We meet from different parts in the country, and we went down to Las Vegas. And the audience has heard my story way too many times, but the airlines lost my luggage.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So, which was my golf clubs. And the punchline to the story is that weekend with rented clubs, I got my first hole in one. But so there goes the idea of getting fitted. But as soon as we got picked up at the airport, two of the guys had already arrived. They had picked up a car. They were there in the afternoon. They came and picked us up there at night. And as soon as we got in the car, I broke out your book. And I went to right in the beginning, and I read this line. I said, guys, this is setting the tone. Here we are. I want to set the tone for the weekend, and I'm going to read this. Right from the beginning, it says, years after spring break and bachelor party had lost their promise, golf trip still tingled with possibility in the minds of so many. For millions of like-minded men, the golf getaway remained one of the few excuses for husbands and dads to get giggly about bunking up with one another in modest accommodations, forking over thousands to lose golf balls, and sipped canned beer and feast on meals from a Myrtle Beach fryer. Well done, Tom.
Thank you.
It's such a great line.
Yeah, that's that actual sort of piece there about the golf trip is one of the few parts of the book that came straight from the book proposal. I actually, in trying to sort of explain to my friends at Gotham Books and Penguin Books, you know, what's this about? I said, you know, golf trip. It's the golf trip. It's not just going to be, you know, the book's about Ireland. It's about travel. It's about adventures. But it's really about, I don't know, I think at the end of the day, I knew when I was going to do this that it wasn't going to just be my trip, that I was going to invite every sort of golf buddy I had, that my wife was going to come, that I was going to invite golf buddies that I didn't even know, because for me, I mean, storytelling for me is, has to be about characters. I mean, the courses themselves in the book are somewhat, to some degree, become the characters, but I needed people. You know, I this sort of solo adventure, it couldn't be a solo adventure. I needed sort of people to say, I'll take the golf trip as well. So it actually kind of becomes a study in a golf trip and in golf buddies. And they're all sort of different breeds and varieties, and friends that just want to play golf, friends that couldn't care less about golf, friends that just want to have beers, friends that don't care where they're going, friends that have to be in control and know where everything, you know, and be in control of every last detail of the trip. So I had sort of all of them at one point with me on the trip. And they certainly, you know, created some great times for me, created some incredible headaches, no doubt about that. But, and I know why you're chuckling. But yeah, because there are some misadventures as well. But it is sort of, yeah, it's the golf trip.
Right.
And becomes sort of, thank you.
Yeah, and it's really entertaining. Your writing, it's you laugh out loud. I mean, as you're reading it, you laugh out loud going, wait a minute, I got to read this to you. It's like, would you stop reading me the book? You know, it's like, just read it for yourself. So my chicken and egg question, and you kind of answered it already, is, you had this idea, and you have to, in my mind, you have to convince two people that you want to do this. One would be your publisher, and the other would be your spouse.
Those were the two.
And so obviously you had this idea, you had to make the presentation. You know, okay, sure. Congratulations, you've written a book before, so your publisher is going to have an open ear to something like this. But I would think that the publisher is a lot easier to convince than your spouse.
I remember sort of sketching out the idea, sitting in like a coffee shop here in Philadelphia, and just sort of really put my finger on it. You know, I'm going to walk all the way around Ireland with golf clubs on my back, and I'm going to play every golf course that gets in my way, every hole of golf. And when I sort of just kind of distilled it to that, I thought, I have a book here, you know, and it wasn't the question, you know, it wasn't about, you know, proposing it to Penguin, where I wondered, you know, will they buy it? It was, wow, I wonder what Allison's going to think about this. you know, so yeah. And I don't write in the book about proposing it as a book, but I do write about proposing it, you know, to my wife. And really, it's funny because it comes up in every interview I do. You know, how do you sort of, you know, what does your wife think? How do you stay married doing this, and et cetera, et cetera? And she got to the point where she asked me to, she said, you know, just remind everybody that, like, you don't do it for charity. We do, you know, this does help sort of, it helps with the mortgage. You know, it is a job. And so she kind of looked at it that way. And what a cool, kind of exciting, great opportunity, and what a great job, you know, this would be to do this trip. So she was also going to get to come and visit. She came over for maybe 3 weeks out of the 4 months on three different trips. So got to see some beautiful parts of the country, walked it with me. I mean, I know it was a difficult summer for her, being sort of alone in the city with a dog she's allergic to, and sort of where's my husband
left
today?
The dog? Why
yeah,
would you get...
no, we'd just gotten a dog before I left, and she turned out to be allergic to it, but we loved this dog so much that it was like, it was a me or the dog situation, so poor, you know, but she, I know it was a long summer for her, but, you know, She had some great travels, and really, she was really behind it from the start, because I think what she got excited about is when I told her the idea, it was basically saying, you know, this is a book. This is your next book, you know, and these books have been a great adventure for both of us. They've been great, you know, for our lives here. And I also write about in the book, you know, Paper Tiger, the book before A Course Called Ireland, took me a year and a half. And most of it was on the road. I moved to Florida for 6 months and then spent another 6 months sort of chasing Q schools around the planet. And, you know, A Course Called Ireland was only going to be 4 months. So it's all about where you set up your bar, some sort of expectations. And I've been lucky enough where I could actually propose a 4-month golf trip to my wife, and she thinks that's a pretty good deal compared to the shenanigans that I've gotten away with in the past.
Right.
You know, but,
well,
but,
and they also say that the three best reasons for teaching are June, July, and August, right? So
yeah, no doubt about it. I teach creative writing at St. Joseph's University in Philly, And I actually, at that time, I was sort of teaching a class, teaching, you know, here and there. So I had the flexibility to sort of take off and do this sort of wacky trip, and actually took off the next year to write the book, but and then went back this year. So it's been pretty fun having a book come out while you're sort of teaching writing workshops. My students, I think, are getting a pretty big kick out of it.
Yeah, I would think so. Well, let's all just take a moment here and praise those spouses who support us on these goofball ideas, because I'm living one myself right now. And, you know, and it's like having someone who's supportive of and believing in you is so critically important to all of us. And so if any of you are in that situation, make sure she knows that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. And I hope that it's
flowers
funny when
go
I do,
a long way, and you don't have to do it often.
They do. Flowers are great. Or to write a book where you sing your wife's praises in it. That's important, too.
That's a legacy.
Yeah, because I think that if anyone comes out looking great in Paper Tiger or in A Course Called Ireland, and rightly so, it is Allison. And when I go to book events or, you know, signings or readings, you know, and inevitably someone comes up to me, "Where's Allison? I want to meet Allison." You know, she's the real hero of this story. So
interesting.
It's funny. Yeah.
Very good. Very good. All right, so Tom, I'm just going to open the door here and let you tell the story, or a story that just stands out about the book and about your adventure, to kind of hook people into this.
Okay. Yeah, man, there's so many.
Yeah. We know how it got started, but what happened?
We know how it got started, the sort of idea that I try to play Ireland at the world's greatest golf course and thus would sort of do it all foot. I'll just sort of start, I guess, with where the book starts. I mean, the book begins with a story from actually my last day on the road, and it was an interesting way to sort of take Ireland. Golf is sort of the trajectory that kind of leads me all the way around the island, but it's not. You know, the story again is more about travel, adventure, place, and people, and golf is a part of that, but it's not the whole part. But traveling Ireland on foot with my life sort of strapped up to my back with some golf clubs and sort of like a quiver attached to that backpack, and walking rural roads where certainly people didn't necessarily travel on foot or didn't get a lot of traffic at all. I met a lot of, one of the surprising themes that sort of keeps coming back, there are two, one being my run-ins with canines, all the dogs that I met all around Ireland on these roads, and the other being sort of my reoccurring confrontation of the full Irish breakfast. And these are the two things daily that I didn't expect as I'm planning this trip here in my office in Philadelphia. I had no way of anticipating that every day it was going to be meeting these two things and having my own showdowns with dogs and with the full Irish. So the story actually begins. I'm walking my way to the last course in Ireland. I basically plan my itinerary as one for the world's sort of longest walk to a place called Ballybunion, which for me is sort of it is Irish Lynx golf. You know, Ireland has 40% of the true Lynx courses in the world, and we don't really have any by purest definition in the United States. And that seemed like a crazy statistic, so I sort of just, you know, go play them all. But I would finish at sort of the Irish Lynx. So it's basically, if you got out at the Shannon Airport and someone told you Ballybunion was left and you went right and kept walking, that's kind of what I did. So on my way to Ballybunion, I met a dog in the middle of a quiet country road, and it was really more of a dinosaur than a dog. Face sort of cut up, covered and caked in mud, sitting in the middle of a road, which is a very sort of disquieting kind of thing to see. Very unnatural. It was essentially his road. And here I am standing at the side of the road with my life on my back. I'm about 6 miles from the end of an 1,100-mile walk. And this dog stands up and looks at me. There's no one around. There are no homes or civilization in any direction. And I've never been quite as terrified of anything in my life as I was at that moment. And that's sort of how we start the story. I'm almost sort of there. and this dog is in my way, and I have a golf ball in my pocket. I guess I won't tell you how I actually escaped that situation, because you have to read to the end to get to how I survived that. But I met some people that a car did eventually come by and stop, and I sort of flagged them down and said, you know, I really need help here. You have to let me in or help me out with this dog, et cetera, et cetera. And they just looked at me like I was crazy, and then they saw I had golf clubs with me, and they said, what are you doing out here with golf clubs? And I said, oh, I can't explain that right now, but this dog is seriously going to eat me. I need your help. And then they recognized at this point the Irish papers had sort of been writing about what I was doing. And so at that point, some people knew, you know, I was a crazy American with, you know, walking around Ireland with golf clubs on his back. So they asked me, are you that, you know, crazy Yankees doing that, et cetera, et cetera? So it was really funny in that moment. Just, you know, I thought, I'm saved. They didn't save me. they drove off without me.
Laughing
but it
the
was
whole
fun
way.
In that moment, yeah, as I stare at them, like my imminent demise, I get this sort of ego boost of, wow, I'm like Forrest Gump. You know, people know I'm the wandering American golfer.
So. Gee, that's something to strive for.
Yeah.
To be known as the Forrest Gump, representing a country. Oh, there's Forrest Gump.
It was funny. Yeah, they people would, by the end, when the word really had gotten out, and when I was sort of got down in the south and southeast, and you know, people would stop and honk and wave and give me the, hey, Mr. Coyne, you know, go for it, da-da-da, you know, where are you going tomorrow? You know, they would know sort of the, because it was nice. In the paper there, they were kind of tracing my route as well, which was really funny. Cause, so people knew, like, oh, you're headed to the European Club, you're, you know, go this way, take a left there, da-da-da. So that was really cool, sort of an unexpected part of the trip.
Sure,
sort of
sure. And they probably did drive away shaking their head going, stupid is as stupid does, huh?
Oh, my gosh, did they ever. They didn't ever, you know, trying to explain to the Irish themselves what I was doing, it was always, sometimes I wouldn't even tell people because it just, I knew it was a 15-minute conversation. You know, you're doing what? Why are you doing it? What? You know, and it was, so it always became a thing, and especially when they stop and offer me a ride because, you know, you can hitch there pretty easily. You know, stick out your thumb and someone's going to stop. And I never stuck out my thumb, but people still stopped. And it was always, you know, and then I would feel bad because I'm sort of turning down their hospitality and was an awkward moment, and it will become like a whole thing. No, I'm actually walking. I've been walking since the Shannon Airport, and they just, are you from outer space? What are you talking about? So it always became like an awkward thing. When the cars would pull over, I'd be like, oh, man, we have to talk about this again. So,
well, you know, of course, while I'm reading and I'm looking going, well, you've got a ball in your pocket, but you've got a quiver. Pull an arrow. I mean, why can't you just yank out a club and whack this dog? I'm not going to go there. Let the reader figure it out for themselves.
I know. But I'm a dog lover. At the end, it was near him, and I thought, no.
Yeah.
But it was amazing, all these dogs I met, because, like, in Ireland, they don't have rabies. So the dogs don't necessarily, you know, my guy goes to the, you know, vet every year, and, you know, you have to have all these licenses and stuff. In Ireland, it's more of like you get a dog, you kind of put him outside, you throw some scraps out. You know, especially in these very rural places, like the dog just, he goes and he's a dog.
Listen, my wife has been doing a podcast called Good Dog for a couple of years. So, you know, we're kind of, you know, we're dog lovers too. We stop at every dog when we're walking on the street. And then my son spent some time while he was in college, he spent some time in Mexico. And one of the things he came back with was that people kick dogs all the time. If a dog comes up to you, you're not familiar, just kick the dog. And you can imagine my wife was like, no, you can't do that. That's terrible. It's like, no, that's what everybody does in Mexico.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
You talk a lot about
Ireland. Yeah. They needed kicking, but I didn't, thankfully.
You did some beautiful comparisons about parkland versus linksland courses, and that we here in the States live with parkland courses. And then this photograph on the back cover is, please explain that photograph. I don't know if you
Isn't
have it in
awesome?
Front of you. That is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just you and there's nothing between you and the green except stuff you don't want your ball to get in.
That's one way of looking at it. My golf psychologist from Paper Tiger would tell you to focus more on the green than the stuff you can't hit your ball in.
But I only see the green if I've got a club in my hand, but from this photograph I see a lot of schmutz. I mean,
doubt about it. I mean, that's what's great about.
And one nasty looking bunker right in front of the green.
Yeah, that's the that is the mass hole at Waterville, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with. Waterville is an incredibly popular and wonderful link track down in the southwest of Ireland. And that hole, it's an interesting sort of story. You're basically hitting over a big, you're playing in the, as with all links courses, you're basically playing in the dunes that are sort of covered with beech and dune grasses that are very sort of long and hairy and impossible to get out of. And so it's just all around me in this shot is sort of, yeah, as you said, sort of golf death. But right in front of the tee, there's basically a hole, a pit in front of the green. And that's where originally when Eddie Hackett designed the course, he wanted to put the green like down there to a pit. But the locals sort of explained, you know, this was a mass hole when Catholic mass was illegal in Ireland, was, you know, when Catholicism was sort of in sort of the dark times was banned, and you'd have to go out and celebrate mass in a place like this. I found a few holes in different parts of Ireland that were built around mass areas, and this was one of them. So they call this the mass hole because in that pit they would celebrate in secret Roman Catholic mass, and they were going to put the green there, but the locals, the people who were working on it, wouldn't touch it. So they actually had to elevate the green and sort of put it up on the dune above the sort of hole there. So you play over the sort of sacred ground, which is just, to me, it's just incredibly cool. So, I write in the book, so if you actually, it's one of the few experiences in golf where I think you can invoke God's name and not be taking it in vain, because it is his fault that the green is up there. If you're in the pit there, it's the hole was extended for that reason, which is kind of interesting and just incredibly cool. Waterville itself is just fantastic. So,
please tell me that hole is only about 110 yards long.
I wish. It would be. It would have been 130 if they put the green where Eddie Hackett wanted it, but then pushed back. It's got to be, what I got in my hand there, that's got to be a 6-iron. It's about a 175 shot.
Oh, my gosh.
So as I was saying, if you can't get to the green from there, then, it's...
Just take the walk.
It is what it is.
Take the walk. So tell me, obviously the greatest takeaway for you is that you were able to write a book on this, but is there a great lesson that you learned in this whole process surprised you?
Yeah, I think that sort of living life the way that it did for those 4 months was I got something out of it that I didn't expect. I knew it was going to be very difficult, that I'd probably come back in pretty good shape, which I did, and now I'm not in good shape anymore, but I was. But sort of living life with just 15 miles in any direction is your whole universe. And everything that you need, you know, I've got a passport in my left pocket, wallet in my right, and a map in my back pocket. And in my backpack, I've got a day's, you know, work clothes, I've got a little bit of food, and I've got some golf clubs. And the simplicity of that and doing that for 4 months, I mean, that really added up to something. It sort of strikes me sort of halfway through the book as I realize that I'm actually halfway from home, home being the end of the trip, that there was this sense of sort of peace and contentedness and simplicity to the way I was living that was really almost overwhelming. I had good shoes, I had a bed at the end of the day, I had food in my stomach and my life on my back, and that was it. That's all I needed. And in the meantime, got to play a little bit of golf. But sort of that, you know, that living the sort of busy life that we all lead here, and then living sort of city life, bouncing around and finding things to worry about, it was the least worrisome I'd ever been. And that was a bit of a surprise. You'd think you'd have so many things to worry about living living on foot. You know, what if I get sick? What if I this? That, you know, and there were no worries. It was just, I'm going to keep right, left until I arrive where I'm headed. Maybe it's a golf course. Maybe it's a pub. Maybe it's a place to sleep. I'm going to have a bit of food. I'm going to have a pint. I'm going to fall asleep so exhausted and contented that Yeah, there's nothing like the feeling of in the morning, you know, looking at the map and saying, I'm headed there. And anyone would tell you're crazy to walk there. You know, of course you need a bus. Of course you need to take a cab, et cetera. But then to arrive there at the end of the day and then just settle in and with this sort of great exhaustion in your limbs, have a pint of Guinness and say, what the hell? I mean, that's those moments were absolutely gorgeous for me. And they were even more compelling to me than the golf courses.
Fabulous. The book is called A Course Called Ireland, A Long Walk in Search of a Country, a Pint, and the Next Tea. Tom Quine, also author of A Gentleman's Game, which was made into a movie. Congratulations. And Paper
Tiger. Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing this with us. And thank you for signing some books that we're going to be handing out to our listeners over the next few weeks.
Fantastic. I hope they enjoy them.
Oh, yeah. Well, and thank you again. Great piece of work. And best to your wife.
Thanks very much. I'll let her know.
Great story, isn't it? Is that something you would do? I don't know if I could do it. I'd sure like to go to Ireland to play, but I don't know if I would do the walk. I don't rough it that well. Anyway, A Course Called Ireland, A Long Walk in Search of a Country, a Pint, and the Next Tea is available if you'd like to purchase it from the Golfers Mart of golfsmarter.com. It'll take you to amazon.com where you can purchase the book, but you can start right there at golfsmarter.com. Now, Tom also recently wrote an interesting piece in Sports Illustrated about how nine-hole courses in Ireland are valued as real golf courses. I've always been a big fan of playing nine-hole courses, and longtime listeners may remember author Anthony Pioppi sharing his journey of the best nine-hole courses in the eastern United States called To the Nines. Well, I put two and two together here, and since the golf industry seems to be struggling with the fact that golf courses are closing, people are complaining and they're leaving in droves playing golf because it's too expensive and it's too long, why not more people playing nine holes of golf? So I put together a panel conversation with Tom Quine, who is just with us, Anthony Pioppi, and Bruce Wilmette, who's director of golf for McGinnis Park Golf Club, which is my local nine-hole course, to discuss the value and future of nine-hole courses. That's coming up next week on Golf Smarter for members only. Well, now it's time to announce our winners. Been talking about this for a couple of months, and thank you so much for entering, every one of you that has. I know that a lot of people didn't enter because they're like, I can't make it to Lake Tahoe on those specific dates. I understand. So does Edgewood Tahoe, but we appreciate you entering anyway. Now, all these names have been selected at random, and many of you have entered multiple times, but in an effort to keep it as fair as possible, I sort out all the redundancies if you entered more than once. There is an exception, though. Our Golf Smarter members are automatically entered, but they're allowed to increase their chances of winning by entering a second time. So, sometimes we had two names, and that was because of the Golf Smarter members who also entered again. Now, these next 10 names will each receive a day pass to watch the American Century Celebrity Golf Championship at Edgewood Tahoe, the dates of which are July 14th to the 19th, 2009. Five of these winners are also Golf Smarter members. Congratulations to Craig Cesar of Shawnee, Kansas, Klaus Dechman of Vienna, Austria, Jennifer Dexter, Grand Haven, Michigan, Ken Miller, Geneva, Ohio, Rob Baker, Park City, Utah, Carolyn Kishihara of Fresno, California, Paul Salemba, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, Aaron Billman of Elk Grove, California, Tim Frazier of Destin, Florida, and Michael Hamill of Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Congratulations, you guys. Now, the next five winners will each receive a full week's pass to watch each day of competition at the American Century Celebrity Golf Championship at Edgewood Tahoe. And four of these five winners already joined Golf Smarter for members only, so they get extra value. The winners are Harry Lewis of Upland, California, Stephen McDonald, Yonkers, New York, Will Freeman, Hebron, Kentucky, Hector Rodriguez of Zurich, Switzerland, Michael Ross of Winfield, West Virginia. Now, I'm going to email each of you to arrange how you can receive your tickets, but I want to congratulate every one of you and thank you again for participating. And now we'd like to announce the grand prize winners, who will be staying for two nights at the Twin Pines Lodge, which is the private lodge of Edgewood Tahoe, right on the shore of Lake Tahoe. 2.5 acres, 4,000 square foot lodge, beautiful place, very expensive to stay in. And actually, because we're going to be staying there the two nights following the American Century Celebrity Golf Championship, who knows? Maybe Michael Jordan will be staying in the room the night before. Little sign, Michael Jordan slept here, and so can you. So now, our winners, the two winners who will be staying for two nights, and I'm going to be staying there as well because I'm going to get to play golf with you guys. The winners are J.R. Holtz of Medford, Oregon, and Tim Kilkenny of Canal Fulton, Ohio. Congratulations to all of you, and thanks again for participating. Now, on our last episode of Golf Smarter for Members Only, I announced that Jamie Harper will receive an autographed copy of Tom Coyne's book, A Course Called Ireland. We have more copies to give away, and those will be handed out on our members-only episodes in the coming weeks. So don't miss a chance to win or a single episode of Golf Smarter. Just join Golf Smarter for Members Only today at golfsmarter.com. Of course, word of mouth is our best advertising, so please tell your golf buddies about this podcast. Educate them about podcasts, but let them know about Golf Smarter. And if you'd like to let a few more people know how you feel about the ongoing content we provide here at Golf Smarter, please write an honest review in iTunes. It's really important in iTunes, since most of you use it anyway, and that's how we keep our ranking so high. Reviews, new subscriptions. We close today with a quote submitted by a number of listeners, quoting Lee Trevino, who, in a moment of frustration, once said, "Golf is a game invented by the same people who think music comes out of a bagpipe." Next week, for members only, our roundtable discussion on the joy of playing nine holes. If you're not a member, you'll get to hear the first few minutes of the show. I welcome your comments, conversations, suggestions, requests, and quotes. We have a Golf Smarter group on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at Fred Green, or just send me an email by scrolling over the feedback tab to select Hey Fred at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.